What we're trying to do at the end of the day is give people access and insights that many might not be able to get on their own.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Join us as we delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver market insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit subscribe for your bi-weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto is a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid anytime, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the FCAT Crypto Brief Podcast. Thank you so much for joining today. My name's Max Waddington. With me today is David Parth and a very special guest, Doug Maney. Doug is the chair of the Boston Blockchain Association, among many other roles. Today, we're going to get into how Doug specifically is leading the convergence of traditional finance and digital assets. We're going to talk about the importance and the functions of communities in digital assets, and really whatever else is on his mind. Should be a good talk. Before we get into the hot topic today, we can rip through some news stories really quick since we've been out for so long. Starting us off here with one near and dear to my heart is the Fusaka upgrade. Went live on mainnet December 3rd. Everything went pretty smoothly initially right off the start. Later on, developers found a bug in the Prism client, one of the consensus clients that's pretty widely used. Participation rate on the network dropped, I think, around to 75% during the next following day. So pretty significant, but nothing broke necessarily. A lot of interesting insights we'll gain, I guess, over the next couple weeks. One really interesting point that I'm sure we'll revisit pretty shortly is the blob fees. Blob fees skyrocketed almost immediately after the upgrade, so much so that there was a point in time yesterday where it was actually cheaper to transact on the Ethereum L1 than it was on some layer 2 platforms. So again, really interesting stuff, lots of implications. So we'll hope to cover that again later. But David, you had some really interesting stories this week. What do you got for us?
Yeah, so Anthropic put out a research report this past week demonstrating that some of their most advanced AI agents are able to successfully autonomously exploit vulnerabilities in smart contracts at a scale that was previously thought to be impractical. So there is a benchmarking test for smart contract exploitation called SCONE, and their agents were able to exploit roughly $4.6 million in simulated value on contracts that had been published after March 2025. But even more significantly, their agents were able to uncover 2 zero-day vulnerabilities, which means they're basically brand new exploits that hadn't been discovered before. So what does this mean? It obviously means that if you're a smart contract developer, you have to sort of take a defensive and proactive approach to smart contract security. You should probably be battle testing your contracts using AI. And it also sort of brings interesting implications for these frontier labs. Obviously they won't be releasing models that allow you to go and exploit smart contracts. Like, they tend to have safety features built in. But as we know, open source models are usually only a few months behind the proprietary models. So this type of functionality will end up in the hands of the general public soon enough. So definitely a significant story. Also in the news this week, we saw Vanguard reverse its longstanding stance against digital assets. As of December 2nd, their brokerage clients are able to invest in spot crypto ETFs, specifically Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, and XRP. So they will be not including things like meme coin ETFs, but they are opening the doors to crypto ETFs for their customers. And finally, what also was reported this week is that Bank of America is allowing its wealth management advisors to actively recommend crypto exposure to clients. Previously, advisors could only process crypto trades if clients requested it. So pretty big news stories this week.
2 years ago, each of those last two stories you spoke about would have been the news of the month, right? And now we're just casually mentioning it just like it's another day. So I think that's worth calling out.
Yeah, and you know, inclusion in the wealth platforms is important. You know, I remember when the ETFs first rolled out, everyone was sort of expecting a huge amount of capital to flow in. But one of the caveats was that these products had not been included in these wealth platforms yet. So slowly but surely, we're seeing the inclusion.
Yeah. I want to get Doug in on the action. And so I want to formally welcome a dear friend, one of the most active champions in the crypto space in Boston, who also happens to be the chair of the Boston Blockchain Association and a strategic advisor to Ava Labs. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me and the kind intro.
Absolutely. Doug, before we start getting into the most cliche question in crypto on how you got into crypto, I guess I have something really specific. So I have been to, at this point, more than half a dozen Boston Blockchain Association events. And honestly, every time I walk into a BBA event, the energy hits different. It's this rare mix of hardcore builders who are shipping code, but you also have crypto OGs who have survived multiple cycles. Then you have folks from academia. You have folks who are building in the crypto space in enterprises. And the energy is almost always focused on building use cases and not talking about pricing. How did you pull that off?
Well, let me thank you again for having me, but let me just give you a little background for how I got involved. For 5 or 6 years, I was with a digital asset native trust bank called Protego Trust, and we were one of three to receive a conditional charter. And on the heels of FTX, the OCC rescinded both ours and Paxos's conditional charters. So that was a 2.5 year process to receive that conditional charter. And I was personally very frustrated by how the general media and a number of lawmakers were reporting what was going on in this space. So I needed to channel my energy, and I reached out to the Boston Blockchain Association and proposed a series on the institutional adoption of digital asset and blockchain technologies, focused on the people and firms that are trying to do this the right way. Because that was my experience for the last 5 or 6 years. They loved the idea. We kicked off four events in, we started in late 22 and 23. And it's just built a lot of momentum and energy. And how we try to differentiate ourselves, Parth, is that we focus on the use cases, the navigation, the product adoption, the product innovation, if you will. And I think we've built a pretty good reputation and some credibility that we're not focused on, you know, just people thumping their chest, talking about how great they are. They're the only ones selling their technologies, but really focus more on the utility and the adoption and the navigation. And in all of our in-person events, we ask people the Chatham House rule approach. So we're asking the speakers to be more candid than they might normally be. And we kick off every single one of our events asking the audience to commit to not recording, coding, you know, reposting. So it creates a more intimate environment. And what we're trying to do at the end of the day is give people access and insights that many might not be able to get on their own.
I think that's such an important differentiation, because when I go into BBA events, that is probably the number one most important thing for me as an attendee or as a speaker, the fact that I can get candid opinions from people who are actively dealing in the crypto space. So I'm glad that you have that as a USP, and it's not, to me, it seemed organic, but it seems like you're extremely intentional and that's happening by design, which is fantastic to hear.
Yeah, it's been super fun, Parth. And as you know, you participated in one of our university events 6 weeks or so ago at Suffolk University. You know, we appreciate that candor and we can talk. I remember you and I had a back and forth about, you know, what is institutional DeFi? How real is it? Are firms ready? How are you navigating? And that's the stuff that people really appreciate. And I believe why they want to come back.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, I want to take a step back and talk about the core of BBA, which is the community itself.
Yeah.
And I firmly believe that in the crypto space, the hardest part about crypto is building a community. In fact, I would contest that it's actually even more challenging to build a community in a physical location, IRL, in a place like Boston, than building out something on the internet, because it's harder to get people off their couches when it's 20 degrees in Boston than getting people on a Discord server. How did you get to that?
I have to give credit to the founders of the BBA who started this organization in 2018. John Hargrave, in particular from Media Showers, he really had the idea to bring people that were passionate, understood the technologies, developers, to just come together and talk about, you know, how this is progressing, how they're supporting it, what does investing look like across what assets, blockchain versus crypto assets. And they really built that up. When I got involved in 22, it was along the lines that I described to you all a few minutes ago. But each time we have one of these events and we attract new speakers, new panelists, we get more participants. They see what we're trying to do. As I mentioned, they want to be a part of it and we keep building it out. I have always believed for my entire career that Boston was a very unique ecosystem. So even from a traditional financial services perspective, it always had the bank presence, traditional asset managers, alternative managers, academia, startups, venture capital, and private equity. And then you add to it, you know, you take that core and just multiply it across blockchain and digital assets. So it's that part has been easy. What's been super fun is to just expand that reach that we have well across the United States. And in some cases, internationally, where we've had conversations around European regulations and European navigation and, you know, just how to create those environments that people want to come in and share and better understand what's going on. So each time we do one of these, it becomes easier. Our events are probably a little less than half people coming from New York and up and down the East Coast and New England. And we have people flying in all the time for our events. So again, each time we do one of these, it's easier to attract more people and better speakers. And when you add Hester Peirce and Brad Garlinghouse and, you know, some of the real leaders, national leaders of regulators, lawmakers, and these firms, then you start to build a reputation and some momentum.
Sounds like there's quite a bit of momentum that you guys have now. I'm curious, Doug, like what you would identify as, you know, some goals that you still have yet to accomplish or things you're really focused on maybe throughout the end of the year going into next year. What's really on your mind in terms of the BBA and the community?
Sure. Let me take a step back. So the BBA, I talked about the timeline of it, but there are three pillars to what we're trying to do. One is around education, the second is around advocacy, and the third is around the community building that we've been talking about this morning. The education, we do a number of virtual events. We call them small bites and big bites. So those are, think about those as product 101s. We did one yesterday afternoon on staking. We did one on the crossover of AI and blockchain. We've done them on custody. So those are meant, the small bites are meant to be, you know, the initial introduction for people that just want to better understand. The big bites are kind of a deeper look into the use cases and from leading firms and, you know, leading people, if you will, around these different topics. We then do the in-person events. So if there's interest in the virtual events, we'll do it maybe a workshop, a one-day workshop. If there's interest in that, then we'll turn them into the series. So outside of the institutional series, we have a university series, and Fidelity is a very important partner in that. I call it the intersection of university blockchain clubs, university faculty, and the leading firms hiring in this space. So You all have been an active partner in that for the last 2 years. We do 3 or 4 events a year. Parth helped me to create the business case competition and the hackathon kind of metrics, if you will, and we brought 13 universities together. So that's been super fun to do, and that's something that we'll continue to do. We do member dinners. We had one with the Ripple team last night. We did an intimate dinner with Hester Peirce from the SEC just a few months ago. We hosted with Fidelity Participation, Ammon Simon, who is the general counsel of the Senate Banking Committee. We have member meetups as well. So it's all these kinds of things that are, again, part education, part advocacy, and how we keep building communities with the participants that Parth touched on at the outset.
Doug, one of the benefits of being a part of Boston's crypto community is the fact that it's really intimate. Most people know each other, and you have that, you know, builder energy. But then if you think about BBA's footprint, you mentioned just before we got on the call that there is an exposure of 5,000 people across different states in the U.S. and maybe some, you know, internationally as well. How do you make those trade-offs? How do you make sure that the engagements still feel intimate, but at the same time, it's being scaled to more people?
It's a great question. We try to continue to communicate. So we have a weekly newsletter that we do that highlights, you know, like we did on this call today, what are some of the key articles, white papers, key headlines. And then we try to highlight all the different kinds of events that we do. We're constantly partnering with both Massachusetts and Boston and New England, and then national organizations. So the North American Blockchain Association, the GBBC, we were a part of helping to create the New Hampshire Blockchain Association, Cubic Labs. We collaborate with the Boston DAO, the Boston FinTech. So each of those collaborations just help us to grow that community. How we try to stay true to what we're doing and kind of our mission part is just to stay true to, you know, the quality of the programming and the education work that we're doing. And again, each time we successfully do that, I think it just helps to build the community and people want to be a part of that approach rather than maybe a pay-for-play kind of approach.
Yeah, one of the biggest call-outs for me was when I attended a BBA event. A lot of times, if you don't have that sense of community, you feel lost and you realize that, well, maybe I'm the only one who's working on this really complex problem, but then you find there's 3 other people. So maybe just to reemphasize on the fact that if I learn about the Boston Blockchain Association today, from what I'm hearing from you is the first thing you would do is you would sign up for the newsletter, which tells you where those events are happening. Is that it? Is there more? Do you guys have a hidden Telegram channel? What else do you have? How can I get exposure to it?
So if you go to bostonblockchainassociation.org, please be patient with our website because we're in the midst of redoing that. But at the bottom of the homepage, you can put in your email address and you will get our weekly newsletters. That's the best way to understand what we're doing. And the obvious is to just get involved. There are lots of ways to get involved in the Boston Blockchain Association. You can be a volunteer. You could be a part of the committees that we have, the planning, the programming, the technology, the community building. You can be a part of events with institutional workshops that we do. We just did a tokenized securities workshop where I interviewed Hester Peirce by video, and then we do table breakout sessions. We did a panel of experts on tokenizing securities. So whatever your topic is and your level of interest, just to get involved. And Parth, to your point, not to be intimidated, because at all of these events, you'll have people that are brand new to it all the way through to the experts. But the thing I love about this community is people want to help each other, right? In the traditional world, if you work for Citi and Max worked for JP Morgan and David worked for, you know, SocGen, in the traditional world, my experience is they're not as willing to help as they are in this space. So there's definitely a, you know, the tides lift all boats here. And
yeah.
And I've had very few people really turn us down or say they're not interested or not want to participate. So I just encourage people to get involved. And from a specific Fidelity perspective, we so appreciate the partnership that we have with FCAT, with Fidelity Digital Assets and Fidelity Digital Asset Management.
Doug, when you talk about uplifting people or uplifting each other, given the role that I have now, a lot of times I have to go to compliance conferences and finance conferences. And I also obviously still go to crypto conferences. And there is such a stark difference where it's so cutthroat in anything non-crypto that if you, unless your label says that you're someone extremely important who is going to be a buyer, the other person doesn't talk to you. So I think that's a really critical path. Well, I guess one thing which and this is maybe more of a curveball question for you, but given the uniqueness of Boston, what are some things about Boston that secretly make the Boston Blockchain Association work better than if this was done in New York City or San Francisco? And what are some things which you think actually make it way harder because it's happening in Boston?
That's a great question. I'm going to repeat myself a little bit, but start with the academia that we talked about. We have amazing universities all within just a few miles of Boston, and it's been super fun to collaborate with them and these university blockchain clubs. But those universities then attract, as you all know, the venture capital and private equity and investors. So that helps to, really build out the interest. Then you add to it the traditional asset managers and banks and traditional participants of the ecosystem. You have technology companies here, both traditional and digital asset native. So there's an intimacy to Boston, which I think really helps us. And it's easy to reach these participants. And again, we've built up, I think, some credibility and momentum that we can then expand that into New York and across the United States. So I think that's the positive. And when you like the event that we had at the Boston Fed on Tuesday, we had 130, 140 people. Cynthia Lobesett was on our panel, one of our panels with us. There's an intimacy that people can go up to Cynthia and talk to her and engage with her directly. That in some of the larger events, I think that's a much harder thing to do, where speakers come in and they go out the back door and there isn't as much engagement. The headwind that you're asking about, I think, is it not everyone in all parts of the U.S. or internationally knows what a hub Boston is and is becoming. So, exposing them to that, whether they're regulators or lawmakers or just ecosystem participants, that's one that just takes some work. But in my experience in getting the lawmakers and regulators and leaders that I've highlighted today, just to name a few, once they're exposed and they're in the middle of 130 to 175 people in our ecosystem here in Boston, they want to be a part of it. They want to come back and they go back to their, domicile locations, if you will, and they're happy to share what a great experience they had.
Going back to the previous question, I'm curious as to why you think everyone at the BBA conferences and in Boston is so willing to help and promote that kind of all boats rising with the tide sort of mentality. What are your thoughts there, and why is it different from other industries that you mentioned?
I'll give you two perspectives. The external perspective is I think people generally feel that we're all in this together. And Parth started to go down this path. We've all, if anyone's been in this for, call it 5 to 10 years, you've seen the peaks and the roller coaster and the lows. And by going through those, call them spring, winter, summers, however people articulate it, there's some shared ownership and some shared compassion, I think, that, people want to collaborate. And, there's a compassion and empathy there that people share. Internally within the BBA, I refer to it as a volunteer army, Max. And it's hard because it's hard to find people that are there consistently. They want to be a part of your mission as you are, driving it forward. And be there consistently. But, again, like I've explained around attracting the participants and ecosystem people, that you get smart people and they want to be a part of it. And we've built a really strong team on the BBA board and volunteers that then appeals to others to want to get involved. And our biggest recruiting vehicle is these big these institutional workshops or events or meetups that we do. People go, they meet great people, they're impressed with who they're meeting and interacting with, they want to be a part of it. And then the natural next step is to be a corporate member or a volunteer.
Yeah, Doug, one of the success stories that I've seen through BBA is when we go to events and you talk to builders, you talk about what are some real world use cases as opposed to, well, you know, it's fun to experiment in crypto and build things which are things which, you know, may not amount to something or it's not required by the industry. But it's actually even more interesting and more fun and more challenging when you build something which you know can be practically used by companies, by enterprises. So one of the success stories I've seen in the past is, you know, I had a student come up to me, talk about their experience, how they want to get into crypto. This person was a designer, and then eventually now they're working. We made a connection, and now that person is working in Fidelity, yeah, which is awesome. So I guess my question to you is, the USP of the BBA is to make sure that you act as the bridge between companies that are working on crypto at scale and the builders who are really excited about crypto. But I want to make sure that how do you balance that energy by making sure that you're also focused on startups and the smaller fintechs? How do you make do you think about that? Do you focus on that as well?
We do. I'll tell you that from two vantage points. You mentioned your conversation with the designer. I'm assuming that came from the university event that we did together. Think about it. We're bringing, call it 100, 130 or so university students to these events where we have someone like Parth sitting on a panel talking about what you are building within FCAT or within Fidelity Digital Assets, asset management. You know, and you can imagine that just lights their imagination. So the bridge that you're asking about, we're trying to bring the students there to help them understand what are the skill sets of Fidelity is looking for, what are the kinds of projects you're involved in, the technologies. And then the perspective back from you all is, what are the skill sets they should be focused on? What are the kind of projects that you're looking for help? How do you think about internships and hiring straight out of college or graduate school? And that's super fun because that's part of the energy part you asked about earlier in our conversation today, because then you start to see those connections and hopefully you're hiring talent and you have a pipeline directly into what we're doing and vice versa. On the institutional side, we're trying to cover the entire ecosystem. So to go back to your earlier question, we've had the compliance platforms and providers talking about best practices and use cases. So we try to reflect all parts of the ecosystem. From a pure startup perspective, we also try to partner with groups like Cubic Labs that I mentioned and Boston FinTech, because they're and the Boston Dow for that matter, their focus is much more on that end of it. So by collaborating with them, we both kind of cover our specific segments that we're targeting, and then hopefully we're pulling them all in into that overall ecosystem. But getting our participants and guests to be able to share what those best practices are, what's worked, what's not worked, I think, again, it just helps to build that community and people feel like they can rely on each other and collaborate with each other.
Couldn't think of a better way to close us out there. Doug, it was an absolute pleasure to hear your story and get to pick your brain. I think I speak for all of Fidelity when I say thank you, and we appreciate all the work you do for the industry and the people in it. Parth, I had no idea you were so heavily involved in the BBA. That was awesome to hear. I'm glad we had you on today. And lastly, I encourage everyone to check out the Boston Blockchain Association website, get on the newsletter if you're not already, and hopefully we'll all see more of our listeners at these events over the next year. Thanks, guys.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2025 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.